Hello, friends. I am your host, Andy Reiner, and it is my distinct pleasure to welcome you to the River of Suck podcast, episode 33, featuring the brilliant Christian Howes. A quick warning to listeners out there, this episode contains a few expletives that were just too funny for me to bleep. It also contains several drug references. If these things will damage your eardrums and or brain, please choose another episode. For the rest of y'all, what Christian has to say is super real, and I know you're going to be inspired. There's even a special musical surprise at the end. Let's listen in. Welcome, friends, to River of Suck podcast episode 33. I've got a very special guest today, Christian Howes. He is an entrepreneur, a musician, a family man, a very solid human, and my friend, my teacher, a mentor. I can't say enough good things about this guy, so I'm really stoked about this conversation we're going to have. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Is it cool if I call you Chris, or do you want Christian, the old official?
No, Chris is good. Chris is all good. Right. We get the Christian just out there for people. You know, it's a branding marketing thing.
Like, right. So like christianhowes.com is how you.
Yeah, exactly. You but, yeah. You know, but everybody calls me Chris and you know.
Nice. Well, I've been podcasting in your atmosphere for a little bit. Like, I've been teaching at your Camp Creative Strings workshop. Now I know it's morphed a little bit. But I remember trying to ask you to get on this podcast years ago. And you were like, "No, you should interview Cedric. He'll be sick. I'm too busy running this camp." And then I was like, "So I'm stoked to finally make this happen." And yeah, man, I wonder if we could start because of that. I just want to dive right into like what is the River of Suck analogy. Just get it out there, and then we'll talk about you the whole rest of the time. So,
great.
Here it is. The River of Suck is an imaginary river that flows through your mind. You're on one side, your comfort shore. Behind you is your comfort cave. This is where you are now, where you can do all the things you already know how to do. Comfort zone, easy, all good. Way far across in the distance on the other side of this wide, terrifying River of Suck is future you, who can do all the things you wish you could do now, all those goals that you're not there yet, but you wish you could be. What's your ideal you? And the problem is, in between your comfort shore and future you is the raging whitewater rapids filled River of Suck, also filled with rocks, also filled with thought piranhas. Those negative thoughts that just intrusively enter your head without your permission, try to sabotage your good vibes, you know, stuff like self-doubt, any of the fear and loathing stuff. A lot of the self-doubt and these thought piranhas really come back to fear. They're all sort of like sprout, like fear is the seed and it sprouts out to all these different plants and, well, piranhas. Fish and plants are different. We're in the weeds here on the side anyway. So that's the River of Suck. You have to suck at something before you can be good at it. You got to take one swim stroke at a time, one step. You can't just magically appear at your future self that can do all those super impossible seeming things. Now you have to suffer. And if you really love what you're trying to do, you actually have to enjoy the suffering. So that's the theory of the River of Suck. So the first question after that is, does that resonate with you? And how do you see that in your life?
1,000%, Andy, it resonates. And I see it in my life. In someone said to me the other day that there's like these, you know, four great teachers or something. And it's like, you know, money, family, relationship, you know, or marriage. And I don't remember what the other one, maybe health or fitness, maybe. And right. Then, but I think also like any practice. So like, you know, obviously we practice the violin, but we also practice music.
Yeah.
Which are two different things. And you know, you practice composition, which is like its own thing, versus like improvisation versus like the fiddle versus like, you know.
Yeah.
So these practices, all of these things show up for me as the river of suck. And I like daily, I circle back and go through a process where I just reflect on where am I at with like, what do I want? What is on the other side of the river? And just trying to constantly come back to it and not retreat from those things or get distracted from those things, and constantly reevaluating like what is actually important and what do I think is the most perfect sequence to look at those things. Cause like, let's say that, you know, what comes up for me and you right now is like, I want to be able to play my diminished scales really fast. You know, it's like, well, yeah. But so what is the right sequence though, that's going to help me do that? Cause maybe if I get actually improve like my parenting, maybe that's the first step that's actually going to help me play diminished scales faster, or like, like literally, or if I like lose 10 pounds, like which comes first? Because like, I know I want to lose 10 pounds and, you know, address my shoulder injury. And I know that I want to be closer, like in my marriage and in my parenting relationships. And I know that I want to make more money. And I know that, you know, I also want to be able to blaze on these diminished scales. So, and you know, and also like teaching, and all, like I want to be a better teacher, yeah. You know, or a better writer, or like all these other things. And so which one of these things should be coming first? Which one, how much attention should I put on each one of these things? And I'm constantly trying to rearticulate what are the things that are important to me, and what's a goal that I can set that's measurable around that, yeah. Rather than just this vague idea of I need to be better. You know, how can I make it a goal? Like a goal for diminished scales would be like, I can play my diminished scales when the eighth note, you know, playing eighth notes at BPM 120, like that's a goal
in context.
That's a goal. Yeah. Like that's measurable.
Sure.
You know, versus I just want to be better at diminished scales. And then what's an action plan to go for that? Well, okay, I'm going to practice 10 minutes a day of this exercise. You know, and I'm going to record and measure back, for example. But I want to have those same measurable goals and action plans in those other domains of my life, whether relationships, family, fitness, health, and other things, money.
Yeah. Well, you bring up some amazing points there. So like looking at yourself as a person, as a whole person, I guess there's a word for that, holistic, right? You know, like all of these things don't happen in a vacuum. So the other thing is like, man, being realistic about those goals with yourself. I think if you are realistic about what's possible for you coming up, you're much more likely to attain those goals. I wonder, have you had points in your life where your goals were so unrealistic you didn't get there and then you felt weird about it? Is that how you arrived at making such good, more realistic goals? Like, how did that happen?
I think that a lot of times we don't set clear goals.
Right.
And it sounds pedantic, but I think actually we're afraid to set clear goals. And because we're, you know, or for me, I'll speak for myself. I don't say we, but it's like, well, I could set a goal of being able to play the, you know, the diminished scale. Or let's say like, I'll use a better, maybe an easier analogy. Let's say that my goal is to write 10 songs this month. So I could set that goal, but part of me feels like, well, do I really want to set it? Because like, you know, cause I'm not sure that I might fail if I don't, you know, I think if we actually spend more time and just stay in that process, then we can set the goal and we don't have to set too many goals. I feel like just picking two or three or four or five, you know, I mean, I guess there's different domains of life, and that's what makes it hard. It's like in music, I might say like, okay, realistically, I'm going to write 5 songs this month and try to practice 15 minutes a day or, you know, but I also am going to try to, run 3 times a week or do fitness 3 times a week or, and I'm going to make time with my kids and my wife, or, you know, like in sort of like these relationship goals. So I think that might be healthier than setting 10 goals for my musical practice.
And those small intervals of time, like 15 minutes, really add up. And I think a lot of what, like, I've been sprinting from gig to gig in the last month and a half, and I haven't made enough time to go walk outdoors. And it's like, when I do, it's for 15 minutes. And my whole day is so much different if I get outside and, like, check out these wildflowers for, like, 15 minutes. How many people think they should practice more who don't go for 15 minutes because they think they need 2 hours? I mean, it sounds like you believe you can make meaningful progress in your life in just 15 minutes as a habit, you know? And by doing those habits, those are the little steps in the river of suck, I think.
Yeah, well, I think even just like with that phrase you used, like, I need to practice more, right? Like, I feel like that... For a long time, I've had that, and I still get that voice on my shoulder, like, you need to practice more. But actually, I think that part of the reason that doesn't work is because there's not a clear goal associated with it. And it's like, the you know, if there's a clear goal of, like, I want to improve my intonation by 50% on this passage in this song, that's so clear, then it can be like, okay, what's my action plan? Well, for 15 minutes a day, I'm going to work towards that goal and only that goal, versus like, I just need to get better and I just suck or whatever. I feel like that's one of the most unhelpful things, and that I have definitely suffered, you know, like my progress and enjoyment have suffered. So I'm big right now on like progress and enjoyment.
Yeah.
Like, so like, you know, like, cause I know what part of you're talking about is like, and you said that, like, get to the other side, but also enjoy the struggle, so to speak.
Totally.
Right? There's a little contradiction in that, but it's like,
sure.
I feel like practice, we should enjoy practicing. And it's funny because my teacher, Michael Davis, my classical violin teacher, he said, you know, there's a difference between practicing and playing. You know, if you're playing for enjoyment, that's fine, but don't call it practice. You know, like, just if you're playing tunes or whatever, a lot of times, you know, a lot of us, we, you know, we just kind of, we're playing, we get our fill, let me just play something. Okay, well, that's not practicing. You just played. Which, that's okay. You can play. Like, play for enjoyment and
play
call
music.
It that. And call it that, you know, and like, that's great. Just don't call it, don't conflate it with practice. And if you're practicing, my teacher said, you know, if you're practicing, you don't sound good when you practice. If you sound good, you're not practicing.
Yeah, totally.
But mainly. I mean, it's kind of a little bit of an oversimplification. So, but I think instead of, but so then that made me, I think for a lot of us, then we associate that with like, okay, practice is hard and practice sucks and we don't enjoy practice. But I've been thinking about it recently more about like, no, we should enjoy practice.
Yeah.
We should really enjoy practice. And so a lot of my teaching now is focused on mindfulness and trying to treat practice very much in the same way as like practicing yoga. When you go into yoga, when you go into yoga class, like you're trying to progress at the stretches and the poses and the forms, right? In the same way that in practicing, we're dealing with forms. We're dealing with, you know, rhythmic forms, harmonic forms, and like, you know, playing in tune. It's just like yoga. But during yoga, you've got a person constantly telling you, you're perfect right where you are. Breathe, move your attention to these different things. Is it constantly giving you these reminders of how you can be more present and more appreciative and more aware and more like self-loving, basically. And I feel like practicing music, it should be that process. I want it to be that process for people. I want, and for myself, and for my students and for everybody listening here, and that this should be the priority actually. So what I've been saying for like the last couple of years is that practicing the violin or practicing music, it's just a vehicle for becoming a better friend to yourself.
Mm. That's the title of this episode. Become a better friend for yourself.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's really the issue. That's the reason that I think for decades I was never happy with my playing. I was always I always felt like I wasn't enough. I wasn't good enough. I was always like kind of judging myself or beating myself up. And I would say for the listeners, like, I know like some of like the most virtuosic musicians that I've ever heard, and I consider like quote unquote musical heroes. I know that some of those people feel like every note they play is utter crap. And I've talked to those people and I've heard stories about those people like playing the most mind blowing stuff you can imagine. And then you go talk to them and they're like, I'm crap. I suck. I'm, you know, my playing is horrible, you know. And then you can find people that just started playing their instrument like 6 months ago and they're like, I'm having the best time ever. So, so there's not a direct line between like our quote unquote skill or ability and like how we feel about ourselves. So what I really want to do is focus more on how can I feel better when I'm practicing? How can I feel better about myself? And that's what I want my students to feel. And probably, you know, in the past when I was a teacher, I wasn't as aware of this. So I apologize to you, Andy, and to any other students for whatever. I did not have this in the front of my mind, and I did not cultivate, you know, a constant appreciation for the student, but I definitely do now. And but that's one of the things I've always admired about you, I think, is that you do cultivate excitement, enthusiasm for your practice. And you also, I think you have the ability to be forgiving of yourself and appreciative of yourself.
Always trying. Yeah.
It's just my sense about you, you know, it's just my sense about you that, you know, I think you're very self-aware, and so it's like, it's not that you don't notice quote unquote mistakes or things you would like to improve or whatever, but like, I get the sense that you also are a cheerleader for yourself and that there's a voice inside of you that says, I'm going to pick myself up and I'm going to keep trying. Yeah. And that there's like an optimism about you that I think everybody loves, frankly. I certainly do. And I appreciate it. And I'm trying to cultivate more of that myself and for my students. But I think that this is an emotional practice. It's really an emotional practice. And so if anybody goes to yoga or taekwondo or they have some kind of community where there's an emotional practice that is cultivated, could be church for some people, frankly, you know, I would say bring that into your other practices, whether it's musical practice, instrumental practice, relationships, whatever, like cultivating more mindfulness and developing more emotional tools.
Yeah.
That's what I'm working on currently.
Cool. Well, I sure appreciate all that. I feel like there's something I need to respond to in there. I try to be a person who exudes fun. I try to inspire other people to find their best selves, but I am far from perfect within the thought piranhas of my own mind. And so one of the biggest reasons that I'm doing this podcast is like, I really like to talk about it. Trying to hold it all in and feeling like you're alone in these struggles, that's the most hard thing. So that's the whole idea of the River of Suck swim team, is that here we are, we're all feeling these weird things. Let's feel them together. And with that idea of community, it seems more attainable to like keep going every day when it seems hard, you know, but I'm still always working on it. And all those things, you're like, I apologize to all my, you know, you're good, man. I always thought you were a very inspiring person. So you make me want to pick more specific goals and practice towards things. And yeah, I mean, I played on a Gypsy Jazz Festival as a guest yesterday after hearing Jason Anik go up and play. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to go play this thing with Enyan, and it's going to be like, it's going to be scary because all these people are like, who can play the most notes? And it's a jazz festival. So how can I go from playing my morning gig of like literally just like kind of a jam session with friends at a coffee shop to like a Gypsy Jazz Festival? And what happened was I got on stage and I had fun playing with music with my friends, which is not actually that different from what I did that morning at the coffee shop. It's just like, you know, what's your comfort zone changes the context of how you feel. And all that to say, it's hard to be a person. And I appreciate all those things that you've said so far about, you know, looking at the context of where that is. So I want to go back in time because you mentioned decades of self-loathing and criticism.
Right.
I'll put this in a very open-ended way. Yeah. I'd love to hear your superhero origin story of how you got to be this person that you are now, but I want you to include at least one disaster.
Okay. There's so many disaster stories that I could share. Maybe I'll start with one of the first disaster stories. Was okay, this is a good disaster story. Like
yeah.
I was like 16. I started playing electric bass with a friend of mine who was a songwriter. His name's Mike Hollenbeck. And I had been a classical violinist since I was 5, but I had only recently started integrating with some of my friends who played in rock bands. And actually playing in rock bands or with singer-songwriters at that time was like a completely, completely foreign world to me.
Yeah.
Different rules, different reality. And I thought that I was like, that I knew everything because I was like the Suzuki violin player playing Paganini and all this stuff. And I went over to Mike's house and he was showing me this song and it was like, I think I even have a guitar. It was like, he played like an A chord.
Yeah.
And then the next chord was a D7. And I was like, you can't do that because you're in the key of A. You can't go to D7. That is a C natural, which is a ridiculous statement, right? But at the time I thought that like, and he said, I just did it. I just did. What do you mean I can't do it? I did it. Yeah. He was like, which was completely appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, it's my song. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
It's not really like a huge disaster, but it was, yeah, it was like, there was a lot of experiences like that. I was kind of arrogant, I guess, when I was young.
Sure.
And I got checked or like, I just embarrassed myself, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. There were a lot of other experiences though, like where, as a violinist, I was trying to enter into different spaces or communities of musicians, whether it was jazz, whether it was, rock music, other music. And either I was excluded or laughed at. Often a lot on my own gigs with people that I hired would be laughing at me on stage behind my back or giving each other like sideways glances like this guy doesn't know what he's doing, you know, and I didn't. I didn't know what I was doing, you know, or like go to jam sessions and like just wait and people just don't invite me up, you know, just like, you know, they're obviously excluding me, you know, giving me excuses. A lot of stuff like that happened to me in, you know, in my kind of journey of like trying to exist as a violin player in other communities outside of classical music where I didn't really know the rules. I didn't know a lot of skills as a musician, you know, I was kind of trying to figure them out. Yeah.
One of those checks. I don't know. When I think of you and I think of a superhero origin story, I'm just missing one thing, which is just that the legal system checked you, did it not? And then that's how you learned jazz. Is that right? Like from a classical musician, you came out of this system and all of a sudden you were like a jazz superhero.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, I mean, that's a big disaster story. Yeah, I mean, basically when I was, 18, 19, I was in college. And I was playing in the bars at night, even though I was studying music in the music school at Ohio State University. Mm-hmm. But I was playing bass in like, I guess what people could say is like the offshoot of like kind of like the Grateful Dead, like social music scene. So when I was at the music school doing classical, playing an orchestra every day or whatever at Ohio State, at night I was going out at Ohio State, the bar scene, and I was playing bass in like a rock band, which was basically associated with that scene. And so people in that scene, basically, they drank, they smoked weed, and they did some psychedelics, either mushrooms or LSD from time to time. And I was, you know, 18. And so, but because I played in the band, then I, you know, the like drug dealer who would service, who would bring around the weed or the mushrooms, he came up to me and he was like, hey, you know, do you want some of this stuff? And then, so I had easy access because I played in the band. And then I have friends that were like, can you get my uncle, you know, a few hundred hits of LSD? And I was like, I don't know, I'll make a phone call to this guy. And I did. And then, you know, and so then I got sent to jail. Yeah. Mm. And that was like the big disaster, you know? So I went to jail for 4 years when I was 20 in Ohio. And yeah, I played four years. Yeah. And I played music in prison. Yeah. And I learned from a lot of, people in prisoners, in prison, men. I learned from a lot of men, and I learned, like, you know, West Montgomery Licks, like sitting on the prison yard, you know, with this older guy named Ali who played like a guitar, just like the guitar I was just holding. And I had a guitar sometimes, and sometimes I had a violin or whatever, and I would sit there on the yard and I would learn, you know, and other wow. Musicians. And we had cassette tapes back then. So occasionally I would get a cassette tape and I could transcribe stuff, or I'd go to solitary confinement and I'd sit and I'd write things on staff paper and I'd sing like exercises. Like, it was crazy, you know? But that was it was a huge disaster. And I guess it's like my, if you want to call it my superhero origin story, it's definitely a big part of, it definitely informs a big part of everything about me today. Me as a musician, me as a teacher, me as an organizer, entrepreneur, my values, like everything about me, you know, has been informed by the 4 years I spent in prison. And, you know, and I don't necessarily share it with everybody, but, you know, I used to share it more, but I've shared it less nowadays, sure. But I feel really comfortable sharing it with you. Because we're close, you know, and we have a really, really solid friendship. And I feel comfortable sharing it with your listeners because I know that it's a community that's connected to you. And
yeah.
So I think I can speak honestly about it in this format in a way where in the past it would be traumatizing to me to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. From my perspective, looking at you as a mentor, but also a friend, what I see you've turned this into is like a humbling experience that really focuses how important time is to you and has forced you to consider what are your priorities. And you're still asking those questions, but, you know, now you're you're married, you have kids, and like you're teaching, you have a business. You know, it seems like life is pretty good, right? It's certainly better. It's improved. You're on a continually improving thing. And I can't imagine. It's never happened to me, but it seems to me like that's the ultimate humbling experience, right?
I think that probably everybody has humbling experiences.
Right.
And, you know, I know it's like kind of maybe for some people it's less familiar. It's more like exotic, but I think like everybody can have hard experiences that are deeply humbling for them.
Yeah.
And so, but I would say that it's interesting, like your take on it, which I appreciate saying that, like I developed a sense for time, but I would say that I would explain it differently. Mm. I would say that, and I think what you're referring to is like the fact that like from the time I was young or when I got out of prison, when I was 24 anyway, that I hustled. And yeah. I mean, I hustled. And like, so people that know me from even 8 years later, like when you met me, when I was at Berkeley, yeah. You know me as like a very like hustling person. You know, it's not necessarily because of like a sense of time. I think that the reason that I became so hustle oriented was because I had like a fear that the world would crumble around me. Mm. And then I think that because when I was in prison, that was a very real reality every day.
Wow.
It was, you know, because I was serving 6 to 25 year sentence, which is an indeterminate sentence, which means that you could stay there for 25 years. And also just because of the nature of being in jail, like anything can happen. Any day. Like really anything can happen. Like, I mean, really. It's not just if somebody does something to you, like you have, what if you do something to that? Because the way it works is like you're constantly confronted by like threats and, you know, challenges. And then, so if you don't respond to a challenge, then that there's a consequence, potential consequence for that.
Sure.
If you do respond to a challenge, there's a potential consequence to that. So you're always in a rock and a hard place and you feel really, you know, and the thing is like, well, if you get in trouble while you're in there, then you've got that 25 on the end, right? It's like, if you get in trouble, they can just hold you longer. It's not known. I was serving 6 to 25. Damn. I didn't know what I was going to get, you know? And it's like, but not only could they keep me for 25, but I'm like, well, if the wrong thing happens, I might hurt somebody.
Yeah. Then you're stuck.
Then that could be
stuck forever.
So that's like a real, like, you know, thing of just like, I mean, and I'm kind of trying to reconstruct and, but it became like a hyper vigilant state all the time of like, there's, you know, just always feeling like super high stakes.
Yeah.
And just like, what's going to happen today? Like, am I going to get through this day? And then, so when I got out, I think that I was like, that was still in me. That fear was still in me. And I think that I was like, I'm going to push as hard as I can to create distance from that so that I never have to go back to that. So that there's never a risk that I will go back. And it's not even rational. It's not even just like about like, okay, I'm not going to do another crime or something. It's just like this feeling of like, you know, so everything else became infused with that like hyper urgency and sensitivity. And it was like, you know, I can't go broke. I can't go into debt. I need to make money. And just like everything that I was pursuing took that on. Like I was like, I'm going to have a career as a jazz violinist. You know, I'm going to, you know, get gigs. There was all a part. I think it was all part of that. There was an emotional component of like, if I don't do this, I'm going to fail. But failure I associated with like really high stakes emotionally.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And fear is just a driving force. And, you know, I started this podcast, I didn't think I was afraid of things. And in piecing apart what are these thought piranhas, you know, Sarah Gorak, she coined that phrase. So like piecing that all together, I realized that I was more afraid of things than I had noticed. But when we're kind of reacting to fear without recognizing it for what it is, I think that leads us in a different direction than a more conscious journey of like, well, this is part of what I'm afraid of, and I'm going to recognize that fear and then move forward. Because you can't get rid of it. That's the thing. Everyone wants to just like, oh, be fearless, go about your life and be yourself, be fearless. Like, being fearless means you've repressed all of those fears that are very real.
Right. I agree. And yeah, and I've been learning a lot from Evan Greger the last couple years, and he's been, you know, working with people in my music business mastermind and then like coaching, like, and it goes out from there, not just for people who are applying it to like money and career, but also like how fears manifest in our music and relationships and all kinds of ways. And he, what you just said, it resonates, because one of the things he talks about is like really not trying to power through.
Yeah.
But actually recognize the thing that you feel and kind of owning it and being like, trying to have like a dialogue, an inner dialogue with that voice, that fearful voice inside of us.
Yeah.
And so recognizing it and yeah. I mean, he's like certified and like a genius at doing it, so I don't want to misrepresent it, but like
what are you feeling and experiencing with that? You know, he says that, but what are you feeling? You can speak it to your mind.
Yeah, like so yeah. So the way I've been trying to bring it in is like around just noticing my emotions and actually giving them more, not trying to say like, oh, I'm just going to power through that, or I'm weak for feeling that, or, you know, or trying to rationalize or strategize through it. Because, you know, I'm big on strategy. Like, I help people with, I'll just backpedal a little bit. Like, if people are like, I want to be a better musician, I'm like, I can help you with that. We're going to figure out your vision, your goals, and your action plan. And then you're going to get feedback and community and accountability, and then that's how it's going to fix it, right? But you can do all of these elements. You can do all these elements, but then still somebody will feel paralyzed from moving forward. They'll procrastinate. They'll distract themselves. There'll be things that just happen, and there's like there's no way they could practice, right? Or there's no way that they can push send on like a sales email, or it's like. It's like even if you give everybody the right sequence, the right method, the right strategy, like the feedback, the accountability, the support, they're still at some like and all those things I think are really important. And like what we were talking about earlier is like, you know, let me reflect on my vision. Let me reflect on my goals. Let me reflect on my action. But you do all those things, but you can still feel like that taking the next step is the equivalent of touching a hot stove, of putting your hand in a blazing fire.
Right.
That at that point, it's a physiological response.
Mm.
And at that point, you need emotional tools, not rational tools.
Right.
And now, of course, we can get those emotional tools from getting support from people like Evan, you know, like a therapist, like a meditation or, you know, maybe going to yoga, like all these things combined. But it really has to be like, let me put energy into these emotional tools.
Yeah.
And so to your point, yeah, that's what I've been working on is like emotional regulating my emotions. And it starts with like noticing like, my wife said something and I feel triggered. Like I hate to use that word, but like actually like, but we don't want to take the word trigger out of context because I know it gets... Yeah. It gets overused and it also maybe gets conflated with bad things. But I think to notice that like I feel triggered is actually a healthy thing.
Yeah.
And to be, because then I can say, okay, why do I feel triggered? Like, what is the feeling that I'm feeling? Let me sit with that. Let me kind of have a dialogue with myself. Like, what am I feeling? First of all, oh, I'm feeling upset. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, can I go deeper into that? Oh, I'm feeling afraid that my wife's mad at me, right? For example, right? Totally hypothetical, by the way. You know, and then it's like, well, do I feel afraid about that? Like, do I feel like whatever? And really starting a process of inquiry, of dialogue, and not trying to power through it, not trying to ignore it, but trying to deal with it. Maybe I need to call my mom and be like, Mom, what advice would you give me right now about this? And maybe she'll help me reflect on it. Or maybe I call a therapist and I ask the therapist about it. But it's been a few years that I've been trying to work on these things so that – and my goal is to be more emotionally regulated, to not be in a state of like anxiety – anger, whatever, fight or flight, those kinds of things, and just recognizing it better.
Yeah. Wow. That's all super real. Thanks for sharing that. I've been thinking recently just about the fact that you really can only do one thing at a time. And so trying to do everything all the time, I have found doesn't work. And in order to move forward in anything, just noticing that I literally can only do one thing at a time. So I have to pick what that thing is that I'm going to do next and like put that one next foot forward. And if I put this left foot forward, that means that the next thing that's going to happen is my right foot goes forward. And moving forward in that way seems more possible than trying to like look up the whole time and be like, oh my gosh, I'm so far away, right? Seeing that distance as overwhelming is overwhelming, but just taking that next step brings you to that next place. So that's how I'm trying to get there, because I'm also, like I said before, I don't have it all together. That's the point of this podcast. These conversations are so important to me.
Well, what comes up for me when I hear you talk about that is something that you didn't say, but that I'm reading into it, which is that when we're trying to accomplish a lot of things, we can feel completely overwhelmed and defeated and scattered and procrastinate on all of them and then beat ourselves up. It can be like this whole like massive, like, you know, just this onslaught of it. It's like 2 weeks and all I've done is got up every day and felt like, what am I going to do? I'm going to try this. And I didn't fall through on anything. And I just felt bad at the end of it. I'm like, okay, let me drink a couple shots of whiskey at the end of the night because I don't want to deal with this. So it's like, and then we don't make any progress.
Yeah.
And then we feel more mad at ourselves, and then it continues, right?
That is the cycle. The suck cycle.
Yeah, the overwhelm and then beating ourselves up and then, you know, exactly. And so, you know, how do we pull ourselves out of it? Yeah, where does it start? You know, I would say, I would invite all the listeners here to like sit down with a pencil, and you could even do it right now, and just write down, okay, what is my vision? And then give yourself some space on the paper and then write down, what are my goals that are aligned with my vision? And then write down, what are my action plans? And then you might have a few different domains that you apply this to. So your vision in, you know, violin.
Yeah.
Music practice or like harmony, you know, like your vision in your relationships, social life, like love life, whatever, you know, fitness, money. You can have any of those domains can apply. But I think the vision could be all encompassing of all these things. And what you can think about with that vision statement, I want to give you a couple things to make it a little more specific.
Cool.
One is, what do you want to receive as a part of your vision? And what do you want to contribute as part of your vision? Because I find that many people are disconnected from one or the other. Like a lot of teachers, I find when you ask them, or, you know, what's your vision? And they're like, I want to make a difference. I want to help these people. I want to contribute here. I want to, but they never include anything that's about what they want to receive. Now that's a disconnect, I would guess. So you need to answer both sides. And I would say when I was younger, like I was the opposite. I was just like, I want to be famous. I want to make a lot of money. You know, I want girlfriends, you know? And it was like, you know, that was all in the reception side, but I wasn't really thinking of, I wasn't able to tap into how can I contribute? What's the impact I can make? So for your vision, what do you want to receive? What do you want to contribute? What do you want to feel? What do you want your life to look like? With whom? So try to spend some time answering those things on the vision side. And then on the goal side, try to write down 1 to 3 goals that really align with that vision in any domains that matter to you. And then from there, you can start to derive action plans and start to kind of prioritize and see where some of these things can dovetail. So like, for example, if I'm like, well, I really want to have more quality time with my son, let's say, for example, and I also want to run 3 times or do exercise 3 times a week, I could be like, okay, I'm going to exercise with my son. Like, let's make that happen, because that's a way to integrate, synergize, be efficient, you know, whatever, you know, stuff like that.
I love that. I think the idea of writing it down makes it feel more real to me. I've only recently realized I'm a very visually oriented person. So the act of seeing the words of those thoughts and goals for me makes a big difference than just trying to keep it all in my head and trying to remember what I'm supposed to be remembering. Like, writing it down makes it feel real in a different way for me. So
absolutely.
Thank you for sharing that process. It's awesome.
Yet I've heard people say that, like, you know, using a pencil or a pen and writing it on paper, it can have, like, I don't know, connect to your brain or whatever, like, more than maybe typing.
Yeah.
But I don't quote me on that. But I do think, but I would say for a lot of us that we get so overwhelmed, as you were, you know, referencing for yourself with the multitasking or doing all the things, it's like that actually we don't even give ourselves permission to take 20 minutes and do this because we're like, no, I got stuff to do. I can't afford to sit down and do it. But for me, this becomes like this for people that are struggling, I would say this is the most important thing for you to be doing every day. And
right on.
And because otherwise we're just taking actions, but we don't have a goal. We don't have a vision. And so we're just like, I need to practice 30,000 key signatures and scales and compose this. And I need to play faster and I need to be, you know, more in tune. And then somebody told me that I need to work on these like hemiolas, like for fiddle tunes. And then what about old time Boeings? I need to work on old time Boeings. Why can't I play like Bruce Molsky yet?
Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, these are so many things, like, you know, and then it's the cycle. So we have to go through the, and I know what I was going to say is like, then take that paper and then like, go to somebody that is like, that you trust and be like, can I get your feedback? Like what comes up for you? And like, don't abuse it, but I mean like use it though. If you got people that you can get feedback from that are in your life, do that. Now again, like this may not cover everything, but I would say that this is where it all needs to start. And the only thing that's going to be left is bringing, you know, a lot of these emotional tools to bear, like I said, as well. So like developing some emotional practice that, where you can self-regulate, where you can start to get some of that, those fight or flight like habits out or whatever. I guess people call this different things. I don't have all the like the best terminology. I'm not like certified in anything, but I think it's really important that those things, if you do those two things, I feel like maybe you'll play faster. If that's what you want to do, you want to play faster or like you'll make more money. Like I would almost guarantee it that you will.
Being a friend to yourself. Yeah, man.
And you'll enjoy it more. You know, because you know, it's like, I know, like, Andy, like, you run, like, a haunted house business, and, like, you know, you know, and you run Fiddle Hell, like, the biggest, like, fiddle community, like, events in the whole world, and you're, like, the most prolific composer I know, and you've got seven bands, probably still, at least, and, you know, you're gigging, and, you know, you're married, and, like, you know, you do all these amazing things, and that's only like half the stuff. Plus you teach a lot, you put out courses, you put out cool stuff, and so I'm sure you're like aware of like the feeling of like waking up in the morning and just be like, what the fuck.
yeah
You know, it's like, you know, it's just like the first thing is just totally. Like, oh man, I gotta do fucking 300 things a day, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you just jump out of bed and you're like, you know, you haven't even like breathed yet or brushed your teeth and you're just like freaking out, right? And then you go through the day with this just like this massive amount of tension in your body and in your psyche. And it's like, wouldn't it be so much better to just feel peaceful while doing those things? So that's my thought. I'm trying.
Well, I feel fear and I feel peace, and they're all jumbled up together, and I'm trying to sort them out every day. Yeah, man. Well, I know we're above our time limit. I really appreciate you spending the time to talk to me and talk to the River of Suck swim team and all the listeners out there, because everyone is struggling with these things. Everyone is waking up and saying these things and trying to figure out. It is hard to be a person, man, but I love your perspective, and yeah, I can't thank you enough for sharing it. I want to also share where people can find more about you. What are you doing? Where should we follow you? What's going on?
Well, just go to my website, christianhowes.com, H-O-W-E-S. But a lot of free resources I would love people to check out, which is especially the thing I'm excited about over the last few years, is my play-along videos. Play-along videos. And I'll actually, for, you know, it's like, I've got a, do I have a loop here? Let's see here.
Yeah. You want to play something for us?
Yeah, I'm going to try. Let's see. Boom. So this is like, I'll give you a little bit of an example of a play-along video.
Yeah.
So I play a phrase. And then you play the phrase back to me. Boom, boom, boom. And it's like that. It's like, and I have hundreds of these, but in different styles and for different ability levels, different grooves and all that stuff. So they're free. There's hundreds of them on my YouTube channel. If you go to my website, you can find them. I've got a newsletter, podcast, Creative Strings podcast, blogs, and lots of courses and ways you can work with me. And new students can actually take a free lesson with me. Any new student can take a free private lesson with me. If you sign up for a trial with my Creative Strings Academy, and I think we have like a $7 offer. So, yeah, thanks, man. You know, I appreciate you so much, Andy, and I appreciate the people in our community that are a part of the River of Suck swim team very much. You all know who you are. And, yeah, man, you're the best, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
Heck yeah, Chris. I know it feels like we're done, but do you want to take us out with a little music?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Why not? Yeah, you know I'm down with that.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'll just go where I was at.
I've asked many guests a lot of similar questions, and the variety of answers keeps me coming back to keep this conversation going. If these insights have had a positive impact on your life or your music, please consider supporting this podcast at riverofsuckswimteam.com. We'll be back soon with more episodes, so make sure you subscribe wherever you listen and follow River of Suck Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. This is all for love and for you, so thank you for listening. Till next time, keep swimming.